Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. We have a special guest this evening. Please welcome to the show, David Masters.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Sit back, everyone, and grab somebody near and dear to you. Tonight, we're going to go on a bit of a journey and a ride. My guest, David Masters, is an educator, lecturer, and radio personality since 1979. He is indeed a man of rare talent and wisdom. A teacher and a counselor, he combines the wisdom of Judeo-Christian spirituality with the insights of modern depth psychology. With clarity, sensitivity, skill, and powers of discernment, he brings students to their own awareness and the healing powers that lie within the human soul. He uses a practical counsel combined with mindfulness meditation and brings help to the wounded world in which we all live in. He is a gifted healer among the most talented of our time. He brings to clients a rare combination of depth and skill, guided by the qualities of presence, understanding, strength, and love flowing from the center of his own being. He is an interesting gentleman, and tonight we talked about intuition and dream interpretation. Please welcome my special guest to the show this evening, David Masters. Well, good evening, David, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Kelly.
Oh, it's going to be an exciting show. You're kind of my first of many. Actually, you're my only to this point, and I've done a lot of shows. And so you guys will find out in just a moment what we're going to talk about, but should be a really, really interesting time tonight. So, David, as usual with the typical interviews that I do, I think people want to learn a little bit more about where it all began for you and how you became interested in what you do. And obviously, as the introduction had said, you do a lot very well. So I'm just going to have you take it from there and get us started.
Well, I can tell you that my experiences started when I was very young. And so when I say young, I'm saying maybe 9-10 years old. I remember one time I went to visit a friend of mine that lived down the street. And when I got to that house, I stood outside and I could see like a porthole opened up in the middle of my forehead. Mm-hmm. And I could see that there was something wrong going on in that home. And I didn't know what it was, but I actually didn't go to knock on the door. Something told me, go home. Mm-hmm. And I did. And so, you know, at a very early age, I was listening to this intuitive self that was emerging already. And I don't know what was going on in the home, but I knew there was something I didn't want to be involved with. And I felt like there was the violence toward the children and maybe even domestic violence in the home. Mm-hmm. And as I grew older, I could tell you, I did have a dream when I was 13 years old. We're getting into dreams now. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it was a dream or what, if it was a hypnagogic state that I was in, where, so I woke up one morning and I looked out the window of my room. I probably 12 years old, and I saw a winged creature flying toward my window. And if you ever saw the movie Jason and the Argonauts, there were these homunculus, these winged creatures that were tormenting this poor person on one of these islands that they were stranded on. And it was so real to me that I picked up my BB gun and I shot a hole in my window. And so my dad comes in, he goes, what was that about? And I said, there was this creature and it was coming in at me outside my window and I shot at it. Now, fortunately for me, my dad didn't make me explain more than that. He goes, okay, all right. And he just left it alone. So my cognitive and precognitive and psychic experiences at an early age were not challenged, or they weren't put down by anybody. I didn't really talk much about it because I didn't know really how to explain it. But my dad understood it. And, you know, I can tell you this, is that when I was very young, I was a thumb sucker. And I felt very insecure about my life for a number of reasons. And when I got to a certain point, I started to realize that there were forces at work in this world that were beyond my comprehension. And, you know, fortunately, my dad was a very spiritual person, and he helped me understand this throughout the course of my life. But when I was young in those days, you know, wondering what I was dealing with, I had to come to this conclusion that there are more than one world that we live in. We are, human beings are stuck between two worlds. And we're talking about, you know, the world, the metaphysical worlds of dark and light, dark and shadow, shadow and light and truth and the dark side of that. And so as I got older, I never really felt like I fit in with the world. I never felt that this was where I was meant to be, first of all. I felt completely out of place. And I was the subject of a lot of bullying when I was, you know, young kid, when I was an early teenager. Some kid would occasionally pick me up and stuff me in a trash can. There was a lot of cruelty in my life. But I learned how to deal with it. I learned how to navigate the insanity that was around me by just watching it and observing and knowing who my friends were and who they weren't, even when I was very young, and befriending people that would give me some sort of protection, even when I was in, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth grade. I had friends that I would become involved with that I knew would stand up for me if I needed them. And so as I get older, into my teens, I started having powerful warnings. And I believe this is in my book, Pay Attention to Your Intuition. In one instance, I got up early one morning and I was going to go surfing. And I went to my favorite surf spot and I stood there observing the waves before I went out, as I would ordinarily do. And I heard this, it wasn't a voice, it was a knowing. And the knowing said to me, don't go surfing today. And I thought, what? And it said it to me again, don't go surfing today. And then I proceeded to tell that knowing to go to hell. And when I got into the water, sure enough, I had a terrible accident. And I washed up on the beach, and I don't even know how I washed up on the beach, because it was, I was out quite a ways in the ocean. And I laid there and I looked up into the sky, and I realized that I hadn't listened to that warning. That was my intuition beginning to kick in. And prior to that, I had had several accidents, pretty dangerously bad accidents. And I started to worry that I wasn't going to survive. And so I looked up into the heavens and I said, into the heavens, I said, look, I don't want to live this way anymore. As a matter of fact, I'm so serious about this that I would rather be dead than go on living this way. Because I felt like it was going to be the end of me anyway. And that's when my life really started to change. I started listening and paying attention to these intuitive hits that I got. which I believe actually guided me away from potential other dangerous situations and caused me to have a more carefree life. But when I didn't pay attention to my situation, you know, to my intuition, then things would go really sideways for me. And so as I got older into my, let me backtrack for a minute. There was a moment in my life where I started to butt heads with my dad, seriously butt heads with him. And I got very angry one day when he was talking to me about something. So angry, in fact, that I determined, I'm done with this. I don't want to have to deal with him anymore. I was probably about almost 18 years old. And I walked out of the front door of my house, determined that I was never going to go back again. I walked maybe a mile. And as I was walking, I used to live down at the beach. It was a cloudy, overcast day. And as I was walking, I sort of glanced upward and I saw these enormous cherubs, angels, two of them. And I stopped in my tracks and I looked up and they said to me, "There's nothing out there for you." And I thought, am I hallucinating or is this real? Because again, it was a watermark. It wasn't like you could see a full-bodied creature. It was like a watermark of these enormous faces in the clouds. And at that moment, I made another choice. And I thought, okay, I'm going to listen this time to these warnings. There's nothing out there for me. I turned around and went home. I told my dad I was sorry. And my life started to change again. And I started on this journey toward this intuitive life. I was never really very good at book learning, even though I've written 10 books now. And I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And so I started to follow my intuition very closely. And fortunately, I got a job with my dad who had an organization. And he was a person, he's written 22 books. He's a theoretical physicist. He's been passed away now for almost 4 years. But I was able to surround myself with other people that were on this journey at a very early age. I mean, beginning at 18 and then at 20 and 23 years old, I actually decided to go ahead and work with him. And I learned a lot of skills while I was there, including in the broadcast world, which I've been in since I was 19 years old. So during that period of time, when I was really beginning to follow my intuition, I had to go through this, what I call conscious process of elimination. And what that was I knew that I didn't have many answers to the big questions of life. I knew that I needed to be shown the big answers, the big insights about what life really means and what it's about. And so I started to question a lot of things that were going through my mind, the things that were running through my mind. And I started to look really objectively at all of the things. There was a popular culture was emerging at that time in the 70s, you know, it's not much different than it is today. Actually, it's more extreme today, but the same kind of things were going on. And I realized that I didn't fit into the popular culture either, because I was on a different trajectory. I was on a trajectory towards a spiritual realization that would change my life. And that spiritual realization was that I actually realized that I really didn't know much of anything, but that was okay, that I could be shown. And this is when the intuitive self began to really bloom. Because the word intuition means to know without reasoning. It is just, it's instant cognition of things, right? And so, but the essential questioning that I did of my own beliefs about things and about everything, as a matter of fact, was so critical in the development of my ability to see things, see the world, not as I am, but as the world actually is.
I have a couple of questions for you.
Yeah.
I have a couple of questions. I'm going to shoot from two different angles here. Sure. I'm trying to figure out which one I want to say first. So many of us can probably in some way relate to what you've said to this point. I certainly can relate to that 100%. The one word that was coming to my, two things came to my mind. I channel once in a while. And so things are brought to me to ask, and they nudge me to ask you. Yeah. The first question I have, let's go. I'm going to start with the intuition one first, because I think that people want to explore this a little bit. So there seems to be a question about intuition. Is intuition a voice that you might occasionally hear in your head? Is intuition a gut feeling that you get that somehow registers there, then shoots up to the brain and says, hey, you know, don't do this or think twice about doing this? What is, and that's, this is just the first question. So what is your take on intuition? Does this include a voice, or does this only include a gut brain response type of reaction?
So that's a great question. Thank you. With regard to the voice, what I realized was that my brain was constantly talking to me in my voice, but it didn't necessarily mean it represented what I was actually thinking or who I actually am. Mm-hmm. So I didn't necessarily trust the voice,
mm-hmm.
but I did trust those gut level intuitions, those gut level feelings. Mm-hmm. And you know, a scientific study that I published in one of my books shows that your gut level response to things is usually the right response.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a gut brain connection that, you know, your heart and your gut level are connected, but your brain doesn't do as much thinking as your heart does.
Yeah.
And this is scientifically proven.
Mm-hmm.
So I would tend to defer to my gut level, you know, saying to the instinctive part of me that said to me, don't go there.
Yeah.
And so there are times where I would be in my car and for whatever reason, something could say to me, don't go your usual way home today. Just go a different way. And I would.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can give you a perfect example of that. When I was 23 years old, I was going to take a ride in my sports car.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in my car, I drove down the road about, I don't know, several miles. And all of a sudden I had this, and again, I'm a picture thinker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a brain thinker. I'm not a conceptual person. I think in images, right?
Yeah.
I saw this terrible car accident.
Mm.
And I pulled my car off the road. And the first thing that occurred to me was this. Do you want to find out? I said, no, I don't want to find out if that was me, or I don't want to find out if that actually happened. So I turned around and went home. So I don't know. You see, in an intuitive sense, when you follow your deeper sense of knowing, mm-hmm. wherever that comes from, your heart, your gut, let's just combine the two and say your heart speaks to you very powerfully.
Mm-hmm.
You don't always know what you're going to miss. You don't know what you're going to get. You don't know what you're going to miss. But at the same time, you have that potential for avoiding tragedy,
mm-hmm.
simply by saying something doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't necessarily advocate for people to listen to the voice, because there's a knowing, and that's the word that comes to my mind. You either know or you don't know. Now, not knowing is another form of knowing, which means it's just an empty space that's left open for an answer of some kind that comes to you intuitively, whatever the source of that intuition is. And there are dark side intuitions as well.
Yeah.
Gotta be careful of those. But for me, I'm always been very aware of the fantasy side of the mind. And it doesn't jive with me. I don't live in a world of fantasy. I want to live in a world anchored in actual reality based on actual intuitions, not just stuff that is imaginary. Not just stuff that I invent on my own. I actually want to be shown things that are actual from an actual source.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, by the word understanding means to stand under. So if you really want understanding, you can't give it to yourself. You actually have to receive it from some other let's just say, cosmic source. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it's just, it's interesting because I know that as I grew up, I would have, you know, my intuition, I would always be confused by it because I would hear actually, and people, if you ever bring this to a counselor, they'll put, you know, or a psychiatrist, right, they'll put you on medication. But, yeah, you know, you, I always hate when people say, did they ask you the question of if you can hear voices in your head? Well, it just depends on what type of gifts you have and whether or not you're not always schizophrenic or bipolar or whatever when you hear voices in your head. I can tell you that I channeled an entire book that I, a whodunit mystery book, which I channeled from something that was just egging me on to write this thing. And anyone who knows me, by the way, knows that I am the last person who cares about a whodunit murder mystery thing anyway. I mean, it's just, it's bizarre. But I was always curious, even on my own behalf, because there are times when I do have that inner voice, but it talks to me in a way where I actually can hear something, and sometimes it's in my voice and sometimes it's not necessarily in my voice, you know. So yeah thank you for clarifying.
Let me give you another example, because there are times where I have heard voices. Usually it's a familiar voice. I was at a party one time many years ago. I was probably 19-20 years old, drinking and doing all the crazy stuff, and all of a sudden I hear this voice, and the voice simply says one word: David. And it sounded like the voice of my dad. So I tried to ignore it, right? All of a sudden, there it is again. David. And I could have sworn that somebody was standing there right behind me, saying something to me. So it wasn't a good place for me to be at that party. It was getting out of hand. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to go home. I'm going to go home and see if my dad's there. And so there have been moments in my life where I hear something and I can identify that it's something that is familiar to me. And so, again, I'm not a strong advocate of people, you know, listening to voices, but there are times where voices are there. And it depends upon how you deal with it. You know, it's not what happens to you, it's how you deal with it. So, yeah, I just want to make that clarification.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. The second part of the question that I was thinking about or pondering about, and I want to slip this in some way, because as you were talking about your journey, now that I'm in my 60s, and I know people are like, wow, you're in your 60s? I'm like, yeah, I know, it's my night cream. But, you know, the thing that I'd always wondered about as I look back now, because see, as you grow up and you're young and things are happening to you, or things are happening and you're not always quite understanding why, you know, or you have a strong knowing about something and other people can't, you know. So it's taken me a long time, but there's a synchronicity that I have seen actually in my life going all the way back that has brought me to this point right now. This is a point that was never intended to be in my life as of 6-7 years ago, but it got to the point where all of a sudden my life changed from being a college professor and also working in law for 8 years. I worked a long time and did some undercover, and I did all kinds of jobs in my life, but I took a drastic turn and twist, which brought me to this place right now, which I never would have anticipated, which, by the way, includes a spiritual aspect to it, which, again, it's, I look back and I now see all the jig-joggy steps that has actually brought me here. So I want to ask you the question. When you look back, or even as I would say, looking back is probably the best here, do you see a synchronicity that has brought you from point A to, we'll just call this point B, because I'm sure there's going to be another level of me 2 years from now. I'll be doing something, you know, maybe I'll be creating films or something, because I know that I'm, that's something that's in the horizon for me right now. I'm feeling like that's coming, and it's, I need to do this step before I could actually get to that next step. Looking at your own life, have you seen any steps or synchronicity?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I would say one of the things that I discovered about maybe 20 or more years ago was that my life changed every 7 years. And I believe in 7 year cycles. I'm sorry. I don't know how to explain it.
I teach that. I taught that.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Every 7 years, it is very true. Every 7 years from the point that you were born or whatever, you will change to some degree. What that degree will be will depend on your environment, your circumstances, and of course, your own aspirations and motivations. But that is correct. Continue. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, my life has radically changed every 7 years. And so I can't even describe, but what I can tell you is that it all, in my view, it is all purpose driven. In other words, so if you don't change, then you atrophy. Mm-hmm. So change is expansive, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're forced to change, then you're forced to expand. And so then as you get used to expansion, then you grow to the extent that you allow yourself to grow. And those are moments where new interests enter in and you have deeper realizations about things that you always wondered about. I remember one time my dad said something to me when I was young, I mean, in my 20s. And I remember 20 years later, one day it came to me what he meant by it. My dad was a very deep person. But I wondered about it for 20 years. So there's the expansion comes when the time is right, I guess it is. It's like, you know, it's like bamboo. If you keep watering it, you know, it just takes years sometimes for bamboo to grow. But all of a sudden it grows and it grows and it grows and it grows. After watering it for 4 years, one day it just grows and it grows 25 feet. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a sort of cycle of our lives, is that we will grow when the time comes. And again, I don't think that we necessarily know when those times are going to be. And we can't fabricate them. We can't make them come about. We can't use any force of our own will. We have to surrender, is what I'm saying, to the process. We have to give ourselves over to a greater process, to something greater than ourselves, if you want to have a purpose that's greater than you. If you don't, then you stay you. And I go back to the world that I came from, you know, 50 years ago, and I see the kids that I grew up with. And they're still doing the same things, and they're still stuck in the same mindset. And I've grown way out of it. It's like I was just too big for that pond. Yeah. My consciousness, I expanded way outside that pond. And I did things, and I tried things that I never dreamed I would.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That, well, and you mentioned one thing here that I hope that everybody takes note on. I used to preach this to my students. Try to do something in your life that you at least enjoy or you have an interest in, because that will also lead to other fulfillment, you know, fulfillment with it. Well, we hope it leads to fulfillment within yourself. But I have always been that way, by the way, curious about doing all kinds of things, taking risks. Now, I know people get scared about taking a risk because they don't want to feel embarrassed about anything, especially if they're trying something and it doesn't come out right the first time. You know, not everybody hits the mark the first time. It just depends on whether or not the interest keeps you going. But I agree with you. I think that in order to expand, and I know those people that you talk about, and so does the listeners that hear, you know, somebody out there who is expanding. Maybe though, and I used to teach this as well, maybe they don't want to leave their bubble. And because they're in this bubble, they feel comfortable there. I used to work, teach in, a very small, pretty much a small town. And I had a lot of little small towns around me. And my students sometimes would bring it up in class and they would say, I don't know why so-and-so won't come out of that town. They just sit in that town. They won't go anywhere. They're too afraid to come here, which was a small town, come here because it was too scary to them. Well, some people are afraid. They feel comforted being in their bubble. And there's some of us that just want to, woo, go on out and see the world and do as much as we can and just keep adding to our expansion. But it is interesting, isn't it? So we're not criticizing here people that are in their bubble. There's no criticism here. We're just saying that sometimes it's good to just kind of put your toe out there once in a while, and maybe, you know, maybe you might like it. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll add to what you just said a little bit, which is that when I was a kid, my dad moved around. We came from Houston, Texas. in a 30-foot motorhome. We ended up at the base of the Matterhorn Mountain Disneyland in Inglewood, California. But then there were constant changes. So I was never allowed to get comfortable in that zone that other people were. I couldn't make really many friends in school because I didn't fit in. And then when we were 13 years old, my dad decided he wanted to live in Hawaii. So we moved to Hawaii, and that's when I started surfing. And I had a tremendous affinity for the ocean. And I loved surfing. I love the ocean to this very day. I have a webcam of Huntington Pier down in California. I put it on in the morning. It gives me a sense of renewing, you know what I'm saying, to watch the sun come up and see the surfers go out. But I was never allowed to be in much of a comfort zone, in the sense that to me, there was always the potential that, you know, if I go out surfing today, I'm going to catch a great wave. So there was challenges that were necessarily involved in growth. And there are times when I nearly drowned many times, but that didn't stop me from loving the experience of surfing. And then later on, snowboarding and other kinds of sports. I started skateboarding when I was 7 years old. I built my own skateboard. That was just me. I was a gregarious child. Mm-hmm. But I want to say this about my experience as I got older. At the age of about 15, 16, 17, I don't remember when, but I remember one day my sister was telling my dad that she had this weird dream. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, I know what that dream means. And I saw a picture. It was like a movie I was watching when the person was describing the dream. And I described it perfectly. And then other people I would hear them talk about their dreams, and I'd say, tell me what dream is. Then I would be able to interpret what the dream meant. And I can only give you instances of my own experiences, which is what, you know, my book, Pay Attention to Your Intuition, is all about. It's about a dream that I had that changed my life radically. And so, but it's, the idea is at first you start to understand other people's dreams. You see the imagery of those dreams. You see what the dream is telling them. And then you relate that. And then you get to that point where you start to see what it's telling you. And again, that's that intuition that's kicking in. The intuition is instant cognition. It means knowing without reasoning. It means you don't have to know why you think the way you do or what you're being shown. You don't have to have any sense of reason about it. You just have to pay attention to it and see what's there. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to add that in.
No, but let's talk about dreams, because I know that this is also a very hot topic that, you know, I don't think there's one person that has not had a water cooler discussion or with someone that they probably trust or like or whatever, and said, guy, you should have seen my dream last night, or, you know, the dream I had last night was just crazy. And they would start describing all these different unusual pieces to this dream. And then, of course, they're like, what do you think it means? And you know, maybe, by the way, I go into many, I call it a very subtle trances, when people start telling me their stories, because I see in pictures. And so I can actually see the whole thing play out as they're telling the story. So I can identify with you 100%. I understand what you're talking about. And maybe many of you out there do too. Maybe that's just the way we receive or we do best with our information. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about this, because some people, they have bad dreams. And, you know, you always get a bad rap with mushrooms. That's another one. Oh, I had mushrooms last night, so I'm going to, you know, get these really crazy dreams. So, you know, and so you have the bad dreams, you got the mushroom dreams, you got the good dreams, well, you know, pleasant dreams, things that don't make our garbage dreams where everything's thrown together and nothing makes sense at all. What is your take? Let's start with some of the bad dreams, the ones people wake up and go, oh, you know, that was a bad dream. I don't ever want to have one of those again. What's your take on what they might be going through?
So, you know, the subconscious mind is the place where the mind, the self operates without filters. So when you're awake, you got everything distracting you, your brain is constantly working on what it knows and what it's, you know, filtering and the input that's coming in from every direction. But when you fall asleep, the filters are removed. And so whatever is that down there in the subconscious mind, well, we don't know what is there because it's a different realm. As a matter of fact, I think that the dream realm is a dimension in and of itself. It's a separate dimension from the world that we live in. Maybe it's the fourth dimension. I don't know. But I do know that when you allow the messages from the subconscious to filter up into the brain, into the mind, there can be messages there that are warnings. And that's the subhead of my book. I have to read my own book now. It is, pay attention to your intuition, precognition, meaning, and warnings in dreams. Okay, so the warnings are there. And the reason why you're having a dream is because you're not paying attention to some of this information during the time that you're awake. So for those of you who have, you know, what you call bad dreams, they're not necessarily bad dreams. They are potentially dreams that are they are portents. In other words, there are a projection of something that you need to pay attention to, that you need to watch and become aware of and begin to, you know, integrate that into your daily thinking. Like, for example, I had a lady that called me when I was doing a radio show, and she said she had these dreams of snakes attacking her.
Oh.
And I said, okay, so those snakes are attached. I said, clearly those snakes are attached to something negative. And so the question is, what is it that those snakes represent? Well, she said to me, her husband had taken away her daughter in a custody dispute. And so what happens is that when we, and I described this to her, I said, look, clearly that's a terrible thing that happened to you for whatever reason, and that there's anger attached to that. And those snakes, when you think of that husband taking your daughter away from you, the poison of those snakes is your resentment toward what he did to you. I said, you got to let that go. There's not much you can do about it if there's nothing you could do about it, but there is something you can do about how you feel about it. And you've got to let that anger go because that anger is poisoning you. See, so the dream is a design. It is a way of showing you something visually that your mind can't necessarily comprehend. And so dream interpreters, people like myself and there are people who don't give you the whole picture with their dreams, by the way. There are people who don't want to get the bigger picture because they don't want the message. Mm-hmm. So if you're open to the message of the dream, whatever it may be, if it's a terrible dream, then step back and start to journal it. That's what I get people to do, is just write down the most basic things about your dream before you forget it. Mm-hmm. And then go back and examine that, you know, those notations that you made. And because there are meaning and warnings in dreams, and the meaning can be that your life could change and you could overcome certain problems and obstacles that you have in your life, or you can avoid a confrontation with something dark and evil simply by understanding that that it's there and that you need to be aware of it, and you need to be aware of the way you deal with it and your reactions to it, because that's the power that you have, is to deal with your reactions to these things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, I know that when I was younger, I worked for, and people can probably relate to this to 100% here. There are many of us, including myself, that used to work in situations where the boss or your supervisor or somebody that you're working with is annoying you, irritating you, or upsetting you to some degree. And I used to have, and I can only speak for myself, but I'm sure many of you can relate to this whole conversation, I used to have dreams that were so negative that it was always never something positive. But what I would remember those dreams, though, and you know how we mostly forget about them when we wake up, all of a sudden we forget what our dream was about. Well, right. I would always remember them because they were that intense. And then I would try to, like, if it was something work related and I felt like I was in, I don't want to use the word danger. That's a bad word. That's not the word that I'm looking for, but I was feeling like I was being challenged by something that maybe a supervisor or somebody was trying to annoy me or set me up or target me or whatever the case may be, which, by the way, because I felt like I never fit in, it seems like I was always a target, and I got really sick of that. But I was also very wise beyond my years, and I just feel like that was the threat. But anyway, putting that aside, which that might relate here, I always seemed to become a target. So then I would try to change the circumstances. I would listen to my dream, or, you know, remember what my dream was, and I would say, here, do this, and then this will not happen. Because I'm a visionary, so a lot of times some of the things that happen in my dreams actually happen in real life. And I'm sure you can relate to that to some degree. And then I couldn't stop it. No matter what I did, I tried to stop it. I tried to change it. I tried, and it still continued to play out the way it needed to play out. Anyway, what are your thoughts about that?
So there are things that you can control, and there's things that you cannot control. And that's one of the most fundamental things that people have to embrace. And when I say that, I mean, you can't control that people are going to be horrible to you. You can't control the circumstances of the traffic, but you can control the way you deal with it. And so for me, when I was young and people were stuffing me in trash cans and picking on me and beating me up, I saw that there was the temptation there was to, you get angry at them and then you try to use a force of anger to push them back. Mm-hmm. Or the other side of the flip side of that would be, you go into a state of avoidance and you don't want to be around people like that, and you try to push everybody out of your life. But the third option is the resilience option. And the resilience option is the power to control your reaction to those people and to those circumstances. And so what I discovered was there was a circumstance in which, as I got into my later years, that I had learned how to deal with people and see how they were setting me up to fail and not resent them for it and be objective to it. And so I was in a company where they had a very tyrannical person who was a radio star, very famous guy, but very mean and cruel and demanding. And so, but he took a liking to me. And the reason why he took a liking to me as a producer of a show was because I didn't care. In other words, he didn't bother me enough to make me say, screw you, I don't want to deal with you anymore. I would just show up at my job, and I would do my job every day. And it didn't matter to me if he was cruel to me, if he liked me, if he hated me. It didn't matter to me. And that was me controlling my reaction to something that I had no control over. And so I was the only person this guy would talk to for 11 years within the company structure. The management would come around, he would make unreasonable demands, and he would threaten to sue everybody and quit the program and everything else, and I would just sit there and go, okay, let me know when you're ready to start the show again.
Yeah, believe me, we all have one of those in our
back. Everybody's got one.
Everyone's got one, believe me.
Yes.
You know, it's too bad, but you know, there are those people out there though that keep, I have also found this too, that when you try to control your reaction and you're not reacting at all, some of these individuals, depending on their ego or whatever, will try harder to get a reaction out of you.
Yes.
And then you've got that you have to deal with, because you know that they're trying to push you to explode. Say, you know, so then they can go, oh, can't control your temper. Well,
yes.
Look
yes.
who's sitting there provoking the heck out of a person. So it's really tough. But when you bring that stuff to bed with you, and then all of a sudden you're having these dreams, especially since, let's say your dream is giving you a warning, like, maybe you should just try to figure out to go somewhere else. People can't just pack up their bags and go find another job immediately. I used to have counselors that I used to talk to about this, and they would say to me, well, you need to quit your job. Well, you just can't quit your job when you've got bills and you got a mortgage to pay and you've got this and this and this going on. That's not going to happen here. You got to figure out, and then, well, why don't you go sit down and have a talk with them? And then all of a sudden things get construed in a way that you wish you never talked to them at all. So it's kind of like the damned if you do, damned if you don't routine. But very interesting how you were able to control you to the point where the person actually kind of probably admired you.
So he did actually. Mm-hmm. And there was a tremendous amount of passive aggression. Mm-hmm. So there were moments that were very nice and moments that were very horrible. But what I started to do, and I guess this is a missing piece of this puzzle, is that after I had my first accident in surfing, where I told that knowing to go to hell, when I woke up from that experience, when I started waking up from it, I started to meditate. And I started to find my own inner core. I wanted to find a way not to have negative influences influence me in a negative way. And that was my own attitude, by the way. I tend to be negative. When I was young, I was pessimistic, and you know, I couldn't look at anybody in the face until I was probably 15 or 16 years old. I was super self-conscious. I don't know why, but and as when I started meditating, I was almost 18 years old, and I started to become aware of the power of objectivity. And the power of objectivity is that you become the observer, you become the watcher. And so it becomes a scientific exercise in a way. You become detached from outcomes through objectivity. You don't try to influence. And so what I say is that I don't want to influence people, but I don't want to be influenced by people necessarily. I don't want to have to use a counterforce to deal with somebody who's using a force of their will upon me. So I step back. And then there are layers of stepping back. And then there are layers of moving forward. And so through the objective experience, where you become, you know, an observer of all the things that you're dealing with in your life, you become less of a reactor. Mm-hmm. And there are people that I described as nuclear reactors, where everything is a super drama for them.
Right.
You become less and less inclined to get involved with people who are nuclear reactors. Mm-hmm. And you become a sort of a calming influence in your environment. So this is the reason why this person that I worked for liked me, because he could get upset and angry and yell at me, and it didn't bother me. And then he could go back to being himself again, because he wasn't in control of himself. And this is what you have to realize about people. If you're not in control of yourself, someone or something else will be. Mm-hmm. And there are forces at work on every human being, forces in this world that we live in, forces in the subconscious world that we live in, that are constantly acting upon us, almost like a form of gravity. Mm-hmm. And it's pulling and shaping us all the time. And so as an observer, as an objective person, you are less subjective in those situations and more in charge of yourself. And as long as you're in charge of yourself, it doesn't matter what happens outside of you, honestly. I mean, take a look at first responders, for example. Mm-hmm. First responders run toward the fire when everybody else is running away. They run toward the injured person when everybody is stepping back away from the accident scene. So there's something special about people who learn how to control their response to difficulty. Mm-hmm. And then what they have the capacity to do is to grow that. Mm-hmm. And I have another book that I should mention, which is called The Present. Okay. It's all about living in the now. The whole book is describing how you can live in the now moment. And there's all these things, these forces that are pulling you out of this now moment. But this is the only moment that actually exists. Yeah. There's no tomorrow. There's no yesterday. There's only right now. Mm-hmm. And if you learn how to live in the now, all the projections that you have about what might happen. You know, I tell people that worry is a belief in a negative outcome. Mm-hmm. What's the point of worrying? Mm-hmm. And you don't have any idea actually whether or not something's going to happen. And even if you do, then meet it and deal with it when you get there. At the same time, the past doesn't have the power to dictate to you unless you give it that power, unless you're constantly referencing future, past, present. That's a total mind boggle. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't get you anywhere. So if you just learn how to stay in the now moment, stay in the present, then everything comes at you in real time, in actual time, and then your mind and your consciousness and even your soul itself can respond to that in actual now time instead of in delayed reactions. Have you ever noticed a person who you say something to and then they process what you said, and then, you know, 30 seconds, a minute later, they respond? Like, how is that possible? I don't know how to do that. I respond in real time.
I've had that. It's kind of like, it's like time's up and they're already answering your question. Yeah. It's like, no, I asked that, you know, 5 minutes ago. I already moved on. Yeah, right. I've had that. I live with that, actually.
That's the processing. The processing, yeah, of going on and trying to figure out how to figure out what the right answer is. You're never going to get anywhere that way. Oh. So learn how to live in the moment is the answer.
So, you know, one of the questions that I have regarding also bring this back a little bit to dreams and stuff is, I don't know, when you talk about your intuition and you connect it with the dreams and all this, one of the things that goes on in my mind is, okay, let's see here. How do I say this so it comes out right? We're not always on the same playing field. We all have different environmental experiences. We all go through our school experiences, having different experiences in school, you know, and et cetera. So we have all these different experiences and stuff. So the question is, are we all born with the same gift of intuition that starts out the same, but then it shifts and changes and transforms, and then it affects our thinking differently based on all the experiences that we have? Because, you know, I don't know if I heard this from somebody a long time ago or what. Oh, when we're all born, we're all start out with like a clean slate. But do we really? Because we have genetics involved here. Some people are very gifted at the age of 2. You know, some people are having experiences like myself, like you, at a very, very young age. And we can't explain where that's coming from. And that's, and you have only been on this planet for a very short period of time. So how is it that person has such a strong knowing? I don't know. What are your thoughts about that? Because it seems like when I was really young, I had a strong knowing, but I wasn't on this planet very long to understand how I was hitting the mark on some of this stuff. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'm immediately reminded of the Star Wars trilogy with the Padawan, the children of the, you know, learning how to be Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And they went to Jedi training school.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were taught to work with a pre-existing capacity for intuition and whatever. And I do believe that the question that you asked is, I think the answer is yes. I think we're all born with the potential for unlimited capacity, intuitive capacity. And, you know, even, for example, Einstein, he was a gifted mathematician, but his greatest realization came from a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what he did was, though, he understood the value of that dream. Do we understand the value of our dreams? Is it, or is it Memorex? Is it just stuff that's just replaying? Is it the garbage of the day that's just replaying in our mind when we go to sleep? Now, that only means that our brain is like silly putty in that sense, is that you, that world that we live in makes an impression on us, and then we play it over and over again. And that's sort of a natural thing. But to go beyond that, to transcend that, through development of intuition, through objectivity, aka meditation, learning how to be still. And the scripture says, be still and know.
Mm-hmm.
That is, it doesn't say get busy and find out, although that's a good component of it. When you're interested in something, I do a lot of research, but I spend, I think, a requisite amount of time letting go. In other words, and I think there has to be a balance achieved between gathering information, getting in out there into the world, and then pulling back and learning to let go, and just to then to filter it all out and to sift through it to see what is valuable. And I'll tell you, I read something from a famous author one time. He says, when I have an idea for a book, I'll write down an idea. I'll write down a couple paragraphs, and then I'll just put it away so I can't find it. And then 6 months later, he'll go back and dig it out. And if it's still a good idea, then he develops it a little bit further. See, we're all too impatient to get to the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. There's a process involved in developing yourself to become the grandest version of the most conscious person that you can be. But if you're not willing to do the work, if you're not willing to be patient, because the scripture also says, through patience possess ye your soul. And this is the part of that I was talking to you about, resilience, is that when I was dealing with people who are very difficult, the first thing that it was required of me is to be patient with that situation. Because one thing you have to realize is that this too shall pass, no matter what you're going through. It's a temporary situation. It's not permanent. Now, if you're in a jail cell, that's kind of a permanent situation. So you've got to figure out what to do with the moments that you have available to you. And you can learn, and you can, there's things that you can do, even in a state of captivity. But for the most part, the average person is impatient to get done with the situation that they don't want to deal with. And that is where you lose perspective. Mm-hmm. Learn how to just step back and deal with it and let the moment just unfold. There was a great Cadillac commercial. And what it was that this car was driving down a road that unfolded in front of it as it drove. To me, that was a perfect metaphor of life, that the road ahead unfolds each moment as you're walking it. Mm-hmm. And so allow that road, allow that path to unfold by patiently watching. And because by watching, you learn. Mm-hmm. By hearing, you learn. Mm-hmm. So you can learn so much. You can. And the other thing I wanted to go back to with regard to your question was empathy. Mm. You know, dealing with people requires for you, if you want to be successful at dealing with any situation, especially with people, put yourself in their shoes for 30 seconds and try to sense what it's like to be them in that moment where they're frustrated and they're acting out and they're out of control. Try to have a sense of why that is the case. In other words, because your empathy in that moment will allow you to see beyond how it's affecting you. You understand what I just said?
Mm-hmm.
True empathy allows you to see that person as they truly are in that moment, to see them as a child maybe, to mm-hmm. see them as a person who is reacting and doesn't know how to stop reacting. Mm-hmm. But it keeps you from getting drawn into the drama.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, you don't feel what they feel because that's sympathy. The word sympathy means to feel the same. Step back a little bit further and experience the empathy of what that person is going through. Mm-hmm. And that allows you to not, because I know that everybody has issues in their lives and they have demons and so on. And the person that was mean to me was always struggling with his own demons, with his own personal issues, with his own ambitions, with his own lack of confidence, self-confidence. I could see it all almost as if in a dream. You could see a number of things that would be revealed to you about that person when you're observing them. But when you're not observing them, all you're doing is reacting to them, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So
I feel so sorry. You know, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Feel
yeah.
that way about me, you know. But what did I ever do to step on your toes? You know what I mean?
But see, none of that actually matters in the sense that, mm-hmm. just like the guy that was mean to me,
mm-hmm.
he couldn't help himself.
Mm-hmm.
There was a meanness in that guy.
Yeah.
And it was like a pit bull.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at them sideways, they're ready to go to war with you. And so,
yeah.
you know, I have to refer to the scripture, forgive them for they know not what they do. And they were crucifying Jesus on the cross.
Mm-hmm.
He looked at them and he said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. The average person does not know what they're doing. They're driven by subconscious forces. Jealousy is one. Mm-hmm. When I remember a friend of mine, when I got a new car, he goes, I hate you. You hate me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate you. That was a typical statement that people would make when you...
Right.
were moving ahead,
right.
and they were seeing themselves standing there, not going anywhere.
Right.
There's a contrast that's created when you start to self-improve.
Yes.
A person becomes aware of their own lack of that.
Yes.
And that lack of that turns to resentment toward you because you're reminding them that
yes.
you're growing, that you're changing, that you're evolving. So I learned a long time ago when I was young, I realized, you know, these people are never going to stop being who they are.
Right.
And honestly, why should I care if they do or not?
Mm-hmm.
As long as they can't get to me, as long as they can't take me down and bring me down to their level, who cares what other people think about you or why? Yes, it is hurtful. Yes, it's hurtful. There's always moments where somebody's going to try to catch you off guard and try to demoralize you.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's a choice you make about whether or not you allow that to happen. And, you know, when you look at yourself objectively, you'll see, in a sense, what God sees. You will see yourself in a loving way. You know what I'm saying? You'll see yourself as something greater than you sees you.
Mm-hmm.
And that you will see your own value. You'll see that you have potential.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see that you have a future and that you're going to move toward that future regardless of what anybody says.
You know, some of them stay with us and unfortunately some of them have to leave us or they just leave naturally. Make sense?
Yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, listen, I've had friends that I found out weren't really my friends either.
I know.
I mean, there was a knife in my back, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, I thought you were my friend. But I want to mention two things. First of all, I want to mention what Einstein said. He said, great spirits have often faced violent opposition from mediocre minds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So realize that not everybody is capable of aspiring. That's just not it. You might be born with it, but it might be, you know, there's an old saying, you're born to succeed, but programmed to fail.
Right.
Okay. Second thing I want to mention is this, is that what William Prescott said, he said, without temptation, you have no claim to virtue.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of temptation in this world from crappy people who are mean-spirited, and remember that they can't help themselves, but it's like going to the gym and just doing a round of weightlifting. You know what I'm saying? You just got to lift those weights. You just got to get used to exercising. When those people put that challenge on you, just see it as an opportunity for growth. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, then you're going to get eroded. You're going to be pulled slowly but surely away from the potential that is already there. And you know, you just have to allow that potential to, you got to water it like the bamboo. You just got to keep watering it and keep watering it. And one day, something will happen.
So right now, though, tell everybody how they can either get a hold, if they need to get a hold of you, or how they can reach out, see some of the things you do, get a hold of your book. Give us all that information.
So my information is so easy and simple that nobody can misunderstand it. It's my website, escapeyourmindsprison.com. That's what it is. And there's links up on my website. There's links to all my books. I just published two new books, by the way, today.
Okay. Good for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. But all the books that I have published already, which are 8 books, there's links to all my books at escapeyourmindsprison.com. Interviews that I've had with famous people, including Sean Hannity and Wayne Allen Root, and I sat in for Clyde Lewis on Ground Zero for 6 weeks when he went and had some personal time downtime. So there are a lot of interviews that you can find out more about me, but really what's important is, and by the way, my book, The Present, there is an entire, the first chapter is there for people to read. It's just amazing, because in that one chapter alone from my book, The Present, are all the secrets that you'll ever need to know in order to become the best version of the person you want to be.
Thank you so much, David, for being on the show today.